Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Synlait Milk Full Year Results Conference Call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Leon Clement, CEO. Please go ahead.
Well, kia ora everybody, and welcome to the Synlait Milk Annual Results Call. Leon Clement here. Sitting next to me is Nigel Greenwood, our CFO. We're calling in today from an early morning start in Shanghai, where we've completed a board meeting yesterday. But importantly, we're sitting in our brand new China office, which will be opening later on this evening. So that's by way of introduction where we're talking to you from. Look, I will step through the presentation, which has been posted online. I'll be referencing that document, and I'll use page numbers to reference as we go through. The headline for us is around three themes today. It's been a strong year of continuing to deliver strong results in terms of top line and bottom line growth. We've been really busy investing and setting ourselves up for the future, and we've spent some time over the past 12 months really clarifying our direction. So I'll cover those as we step through the presentation. I'm going to kick off with an overall strategic update, and then I'll hand over to Nigel. He'll take us through some more detail in terms of the overall results, and then hand back to me for some guidance and summary comments, and then we can open up for questions. So I'm just on page two of the deck at the moment, which summarises those key themes I referenced. Deliver, invest, and clarify. Our result today is characterized by crossing the $1 billion threshold in terms of top line for the first time. Strong momentum in our top line, increasing 17% to just over $1 billion, and that's a really strong milestone for the business. Net profits increased 10%, up to $82.2 million, so good solid underlying profit growth there for us. And importantly, behind that result, as you guys know, we fund a lot of our activity off our balance sheet, and our cash flows increased a healthy 39% to $136.7 million. So good underlying cash flow result there as well. That's underpinned by strong infant sales growth, up 21%, with final infant volumes of 42,907 metric tonnes. Also today, we're announcing an average milk price across our supplier base of $6.58. That's made up of a base milk price of $6.40 and average incentive payments to our farmer network of 18 cents. And look, it does show that the strong work that our farmers are doing in terms of supporting what we do for our customers, and it's really important we continue to acknowledge the work they do given the uncertainty in the climate in New Zealand at the moment. It's been a really big year investing for the future. Four main facilities have come online. We doubled lactoferrin. Our Pōkeno project has been a really big focus for us, and more on that later. We've stood up the advanced liquid dairy packaging facility, $134 million there, built and commissioned that in 18 months, and we took on the assets of Talbot Forest on the 1st of August. Also announcing today a new dry store facility, $32 million investment there for a 30,000 square metre warehouse facility. That unlocks, it's a really nice little project actually, it unlocks a lot of double handling that we have in our network. It provides greater control of our inventory and traceability, improves our sustainability for footprint, and ultimately helps us serve our customers better. So that's got a good strong investment return behind it, even though it's not a growth capex. And also we're bringing in 218 capable people. We've done that over the last 12 months. Very experienced and high energy people. So a lot of the theme of our business has been delivering a good result whilst we keep investing for the future. And finally, we've clarified our direction, spent a lot of time with the team working through our purpose, ambition and our strategy, and that now underpins everything we do and creates a lot of meaning and clarity for our people. Every year is not without its challenges though. I'll just shift into page three, and we want to be upfront with you that, yeah, we've got some good results, but we are dealing with some challenges, and that's the nature of our business. We're a growth organisation, and that means that you know, we do have to work through challenges at times. Obviously there's some uncertainty around Pōkeno and the facility there. We'll come back to that in a deeper update later on. We acknowledge the uncertainty that still exists around SAMR registrations, and we are still awaiting the site order, but the good news is that our Akara and Pure Canterbury brands have been approved subject to those site audits. It's just very hard to be unequivocal around timings for those site audits. We also had some challenges around commissioning our liquid dairy facility. They are one-off losses. We've incurred $3.5 million losses there in the past year. We're working really hard to stabilise that performance, and we'll bring it back in line with expectation over the next few months. Look, I know the market's also keen to hear if we've got big main customer announcements to do. We've got none of those today. We are comfortable with our customer pipeline, but no new announceable material ingredients agreements to announce. We are working hard through that, and we realise there's a lot of capacity to fill, and those customer conversations remain top of mind for us. We announced earlier this year that the on-hold on the US FDA registration process for Munchkin. It's obviously put some uncertainty around our US market. And look, overarching that, the macroeconomic climate and the regulatory environment for our industry, with national policy statements for freshwater management and zero carbon bills impacting farmer sentiment, and the wider industry is obviously going through some challenges at the moment. So those are the challenges that we're working through. We've got a strong plan to continue to work through them, and a strong underlying business in the context of that, but being upfront around the things that we're dealing with. Shifting to slide four, just important to remind everybody that we do have a strong, sustainable, competitive, differentiated value chain. We feel we've established really strong differentiated milk supply, an integrated manufacturing chain that's efficient, and you can see that in our underlying result this year. We deal with complex regulatory environments and get good outcomes for our customers, and we work to ensure that quality standards are met, and those hand-in-hand ensure market access is assured for our customers. We are focused on building and establishing two new points of difference across our value chain, a strong R&D and innovation capability to support the needs of our customers as they grow, and really dialing into the commitment that we made around sustainability and making sure that's a point of difference as well. I'll quickly go through our strategy. We've got our strategy on page five there. Eight strategic paths, five focused on growth, and three enabling and setting up our business for the future. Stepping first through our growth strategy, we have been focusing, and we must make sure we focus on delivering against our infant nutrition strategy and strategic path. That delivery is on track, 21% growth in the underlying sales there. We're awaiting brand registrations for China brands, and the lactoferrin capacity doubled over the last period. That's provided some good contribution to our overall performance. In terms of everyday dairy, that strategy has progressed. We've stood up the new facility at Dunsandel. We've taken on the assets of Talbot Forest, and we're looking at new opportunities in that space. And then we move over to food service, where we're really starting to develop that strategy. We've talked about UHT creams being an opportunity that we can look at, and it optimises milk solids in terms of the value stream we get from surplus fat through the infant volume that we have. We've grayed out the next big thing in sports nutrition strategic paths. They aren't a focus for us at the moment. As I say, we do need to make sure we're managing and prioritising our activities as we go forward. So stepping through some more detail on infant nutrition on page seven, total infant formula volumes of 42,907 metric tonnes. That's up 21% on F18 and right in the middle of our guidance range of 41 to 45. Obviously underpinned by strong partnership with A2 Milk, and that's continued to grow for us. Our other brands are taking longer than expected to achieve registration. Our Akara and Pure Canterbury brands both have approved registration, but they are subject to a site audit. So that's some good news, but it's hard to be unequivocal around the timings for those site audits, and we'll continue to work through Akara. We're also looking forward to Pōkeno coming online, another 45,000 tonne there. The GAC facility registration for Auckland, we're expecting that in the near future. And obviously we've got the capability to look at ready-to-feed infant nutrition products out of the liquid facility. Moving to Everyday Dairy now, we did have some initial commissioning challenges around the Everyday Dairy facility. Overall gross margin contribution of $3.5 million loss through the period that we stood that up. We are working to stabilise performance and bring it back in line with expectations. The main thing is that we did meet the requirements of our customer, and our customer's really happy with what we've been able to deliver into store, and we're working through those learnings, and they are one-off losses, which we will stabilise over time. We're also looking at new opportunities, and we do expect first sales off our long life line to come into the second half of F20, and as I mentioned, we took on the assets of Talbot Province Trees, and we estimate production there in FY20 of 5,000 metric tonne. So moving now to slide 9, just some top line comments on what we're doing around our enabling strategy, net positive for the planet around environment, building a healthy Synlait around culture, capability, processes and systems, and establishing a strong world-class value chain. I'll go into the details straight away. Net positive for the planet strategy on page 10. We're working through leading agriculture's response for climate change in New Zealand around dairying. We've got a strong baseline greenhouse gas inventory, which gives us a starting point. We've got some clear plans on the initiatives we can do to start to make a meaningful impact there. And as part of that, we switched on New Zealand's first large-scale electro boiler in March to provide the process heat for our liquid facility. We're also looking at what we can do around minimising water usage and water degradation, obviously very topical aspects for the New Zealand industry, and leading the way for animal welfare and the circular economy in New Zealand. The activity around building a healthier Synlait, strong focus on health and safety. We've got some improvement there, but we're not where we want to be, a 28% improvement in reduction in injury rate. But we need to continue to focus on that. Important that we continue to build our culture and capability. We do that through engagement, some strong focus on diversity and inclusion, and we've got some reasonable improvement in metrics around that space. And excited that in the past few months we've launched a really strong program to live our purpose called Whakapuawai, which is around a commitment to trees, to landscaping our Dunsandel site and working with milk suppliers on farms that would benefit from restoration and riparian planting, and doing that for community areas as well. So obviously a really meaningful and topical interest area given the announcements on water recently, and we see a strong opportunity to continue with our partner with our farmers and community groups to support that. And then behind that, we're also working on setting ourselves up for strong growth enabling systems and have an ERP project underway to make sure that we set ourselves up for future there. And finally, on the strategic side, the world-class value chain aspect, we are upgrading the declared capacity for some of our facilities today, and that's been as a result of some of the great work the team have been doing on manufacturing efficiencies. So these are quite material increases in upgrading our capacity around declared capacity. We're moving all of our dryers at Dunsandel from 40,000 metric tonne to 45,000 tonne. We're moving the canning line capacity from 35 to 40. So 12.5% and 14% upgrades to capacity. AMF also up 25. And that's a function of the fact that we were able to process 8.7% more milk this year. And look, these are material improvements in the ability for us to get return from the assets that we have in the ground. We're also announcing a new dry store today, which I'll come back to. A strong focus around safe food and market access. We got FSSC 22,000 accreditation for Dunsandel, which is something our customers value. We're opening a new China office today, as I mentioned. We're working through the GAC registration for Auckland, and we await the registrations for Akara and Pure Canterbury. Stream of work around transparency, B Corp, ESG work and CDP declarations that are in play there, and continuing to work with our farmers on healthier farming practices to ensure that they and we are best positioned for some of the changes impacting our industry around that space. So the announcement on page 13 is for Drysdale 4. It's a new 30,000 square metre facility and warehouse at Dunn's Handle, and allows us to bring all of our off-site storage on-site. It reduces a significant amount of double handling and intra-warehouse movements. It allows us to get greater control over our inventories and improve customer service, traceability and value-add services. So, look, this is it's not a growth CapEx, but it's a strong efficiency based investment that drives a very good return for us. So $32 million going in there, and there's a picture of the groundworks that are underway. Look, I do want to front the Pōkeno issue as well. So talking to slide 14, look, following on from the announcement at the end of August, we just did want to confirm that the oral hearing has been set for the 21st of October. That's an oral hearing for the Supreme Court to decide if they will hear the case. We are on track in terms of commissioning this facility to take our first milk this month, so just a number of weeks away we will be able to get that running. We're very excited about this, the nature of the facility. It's a world-class place with an engaged and capable team, and it's backed by some of Waikato's best farmers that we were able to recruit as part of the process. So we look forward to updating the market on this milestone. In terms of our discussions with all parties, we've been working with all parties. We have made what we believe is a reasonable offer to the counterparty, and we're continuing to have conversations with all involved to make sure that we get an outcome that works for everybody. We're confident that we won't prevent NZIPL from achieving their own plans for the land, even if it does include a quarry, and we remain really willing to work with them on this. But look, I do want to acknowledge this has created some uncertainty, but at the same time, that uncertainty and the public aspect of this, we're not going to be forced into an outcome that doesn't serve the needs of our shareholders' best interests here. So we will play for time if that's what's required to do. We think we're being reasonable around the legal position that we've reached and the offer that we've made. We're very comfortable with our legal position. And did want to remind the market that the contractual obligation to procure the removal of the covenants was with the vendor. So when we say we're talking to all parties, it includes both NZIPL and the vendor of the land. So look, we're working hard towards one of two outcomes here, either a reasonable settlement or we'll run this through the courts. We're really comfortable that our legal exposure here is not substantial, and we're determined, and our auditors agreed with us, that no provision is required under accounting standards in our financial statements. So that's an update on Pōkeno. We'll continue to provide updates as they emerge and as they're relevant. So that's my strategic update. I'll hand over to Nigel now, who'll pick up around our financial results.
Good morning, everyone. I'm on page 16 of the slide deck, which is just the results at a glance, the overview. As Leon already noted earlier in the presentation, we did have a good strong lift in our net profit after tax to $82.2 million over $74.6 million last year. And that really reflects the momentum that we had in the second half of FY19 that we did signal at the time of our interim results announcement. We had strong consumer packaged infant formula sales, up 21% to almost 43,000, and we note that we did almost 25,000 metric tonnes of infant formula sales in the second half. Our powders and cream sales increased 15% to almost 107,000 metric tonnes, and we also increased our lactoferrin volumes of sales to 21 metric tonnes from 16 last year, and in a very favourable pricing environment, which you will no doubt have seen from the gross margin slides that are included in the pack. I'll come to that a little later. Really important to note that our manufacturing efficiencies enabled us to process 8.7% more milk on effectively the same dryers and kit that we had last year, and that really is a significant improvement, and it's what's driven the ability for us to increase our production year on year with effectively the same underlying infrastructure. Our gross margin per tonne did contract a little bit. I won't go through that in detail now. I've got a slide coming up on that, and I'll tell you exactly how that came about. Sales volume and inventory on page 17. We exceeded $1 billion in revenue for the first time. That's a real milestone for this business. I do recall when I joined the company way back in 2010, I think we were just around $200 million. In the last 9 years, we've grown the business to $1 billion in revenue. So we're very proud as an organisation to have achieved that on the back of 43,000 tonnes of infant formula, which was right in the middle of our guidance that we provided at the outset of the year. Total powder sales increased to 150,000 metric tonnes, and that has been enabled by our manufacturing efficiencies. Overall, our product mix year on year is roughly the same as last year, so that really hasn't changed that much. We did reduce our finished goods inventory, however, by 12.7% to just over 23,000 tonnes, and that's on the back of, you know, some really successful supply chain processes, as well as dealing with some impaired stock efficiently and quickly as we work through the season. Lactoferrin sales I've already talked to. And by the way, those sales volumes don't include the sales that we make internally for our own internal use. Production volume, already coming back to the production manufacturing efficiencies again, did increase, enabled us to increase our production volume by 5% to 146,000 tonnes, over 139,000 tonnes last year. Consumer packaged infant formula production increased as a share of total production to 30% over 26% last year. Overall, we processed 8.7% more milk, 66.1 million kgms from 60.8 last year, and that included milk processed in our advanced liquid dairy packaging facility. And overall, we almost doubled our lactoferrin production from 12 metric tonnes last year to 23 metric tonnes in FY19. Slide 19, gross profit performance. As noted earlier, our gross profit per metric tonne was slightly lower in FY19 over FY18, and the key drivers for that is, firstly, as we signalled throughout the year, the margin that we make on our consumer packaged infant formula sales are at lower margins than we experienced in FY18. And that's on the back of the renegotiation of our supply agreement with the A2 Milk Company back in July last year. Changes to our customer mix also affected that. In FY18, we had sales to our China brand customers, which are at materially higher margins than we experienced with the A2 Milk Company, and that also helped lift our margin per tonne last year that we didn't get in FY19. And we've also increased our investments in people in front of assets coming online. So it does increase our manufacturing overheads as we bring those people on board for the new facilities that we're building. Whilst our profit has declined, our gross profit per metric tonne has declined, overall gross profit has increased due to the uplift in sales. And the gross, and that gross profit contribution from fresh milk of a loss of $3.5 million is also reflecting some initial commissioning challenges that we've had in that area. Looking forward to FY20, the market should expect that our gross profit per metric tonne will reduce a little. And the reason for that is as we bring on Pokeno, we will be increasing initially the volume of our ingredient sales, so our product mix will change, and we'll see more ingredient sales next year, which will bring our gross profit per metric tonne down on FY19. Overheads. We continue to invest significantly in people, with 218 new staff joining Synlait in 2019 in advance of our new production facilities coming online. So our overheads increased by almost $8 million or 14.6% on FY18, and the largest driver of that is our employee costs. We continue to invest for the future. So the majority of the back office people that have come into the business are in the areas of our research and development, business development and leadership capability. It's really important that we invest in these areas in order to enable the strategy that we've outlined to you earlier in the meeting. Operating cash flow. This is a real call out for us, and I think that you can see that whilst our EBITDA for the year was at 98.4 million, with a very good return, what we've actually been able to do is, through working capital efficiencies, improve our operating cash flow to $136.7 million for the year. You can see in the bar, in the bridge on that page, that working capital improvements enabled us to release $37 million in cash flow year on year, and that's mainly as a combination of inventory management efficiencies, as well as the continued benefits from our receivables assignment program. This year we introduced Nestle into that program, so that by the 31st of July we had $109 million of receivables assigned versus $69 million at the end of FY18. And net debt obviously has increased as a consequence of the large investments that we've made year on year to $333.6 million. And that's up from $114.9 million last year. So that is on the back of the major growth project that we've talked about throughout, Leon referred to earlier in the presentation, and that also includes an $18 million loan that we secured to Talbot Forest Cheese that we settled on. We acquired that business on the 1st of August, which with a total purchase price of $37.8 million. Important to note that at the end of the year, our leverage ratio was still strong at 2.2 times, and so our balance sheet is still in a very strong position to enable the future growth opportunities that we've been referring to. Lastly, the milk price update. Mentioned already, an average milk price of $6.58 per kilogram of milk solid. That's made up of a combination of our base milk price of $6.40, as well as additional 18 cents in incentive payments. This is a very strong milk price that we're paying to our farmers, and it's reflective of the relationship we have with them. It's reflective of the new farmers that we've brought on board in the Waikato. And for Synlait, it's important that we continue to pay strong milk prices to our farmers. At times we'll be a little bit above the market, at times we'll be a little bit below. We'll see how that plays out in FY19. We've also increased the level of transparency about how we've determined our milk price, and we've included a table in our annual report that will help you better understand the whole process by which we use to identify the milk price that we pay to our farmers. So with that, I'll pass back to Leon to provide closing remarks and an outlook for FY20.
Thanks, Nigel. So just on page 25 of the presentation, look, we are increasingly diversifying our business in the way that we create value. So we have made a decision to change the way we provide guidance away from infant nutrition volumes. We expect FY20 profits to continue to grow. The rate of profitability growth will be similar to the year that we've just come through, 19 over 18, and we'll be able to deliver that at least a similar rate. We're expecting these earnings to be supported by strong momentum that we've gained in the second half of F19, where we sold just over around 25,000 metric tons of infant nutrition. We'll have a full year of operation of the advanced dairy facility. As I said, we will stabilise that. We'll continue to progress our everyday dairy strategy. We'll have a full operation of the expanded lactoferrin and capacity coming off that. And we will have a contribution from Synlait Pekino, which will be commissioned later this month. So that's the guidance slide. Just coming to the last one on final word before we open up the call for questions. Overall, three things stand out for me this year. We've delivered a strong financial result. We've hit some good milestones in terms of top-line growth, but continue to support our customers to grow, as well as driven strong operating efficiencies in our network and getting more value for the assets that we have on the ground. We've invested for the future. There's four new facilities that are either being built, commissioned or acquired, and we've brought in 218 capable people to help us run those facilities. And we've clarified our direction to make sure everyone's clear on what we're doing with a new purpose, ambition and strategy that has been launched. So that concludes the presentation that Nigel and I have been through. We're spot on half an hour, which was the plan, so that's good. We'll now open up the call for questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. And if you are on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before asking your question. Your first question today comes from Arie Dekker with Jarden. Please go ahead.
Well, morning, gentlemen. First question, just around the FY20 outlook, and just get you to clarify a few things. So, I guess the continuation of strong momentum in second half on finished infant formula, you know, at 25,000 tonnes, that compares to sort of 17 to 19,000 in the three preceding halves. So, are you saying that we're talking about, you know, which is obviously reasonably strong growth, are you talking about growth momentum into FY20 off that second half base will be at the same sort of level as you achieved in that second half in terms of sort of like 25% plus volume growth? Or do you mean something different in terms of, you know, you've got a new base which is strong and you expect momentum still from here on that base?
Yeah, morning Ari. No, that's a good question. No, we're not saying the rate will continue to grow on the 18 to 19 levels in terms of the previous halves. We're saying that that strong momentum as a baseline performance for a half of 25,000 tonne, it would be a reasonable basis for us to continue to grow from. So look, that might be if you double that, that might be a reasonable bottom line, end of a bottom base range for a forecast there. But obviously we expect it to grow from there as well.
Yeah, no, that's helpful. Thank you. And then I may have missed it, but in terms of at least a similar rate of profit growth, I mean, obviously there's a lot of, things happening in FY20 in terms of the plant coming on, and obviously that creates a little bit of a drag in terms of things like interest and depreciation. Can you just, what clarity can you, I mean, profit growth was I think circa 10% in 19 over 18. What can you kind of say there?
Yeah, look, the guidance is that we'll at least be able to deliver a similar rate as we've delivered over 18 to 19. So you're right, that was 10%. So we believe our guidance for FY20 is another 10% on what we've delivered this year of 82.2. And you know, we could be up from there. But as you say, we've got a lot on, we're early in the year. We do have some of those costs coming through. We've also got some strong growth plans as well.
Sure. Just on Acara and Pure Canterbury, and, you know, may not be up to speed with exactly what you've said there, but the site audit that those brands are now, you know, conditional on or subject to, where is that site audit to occur?
That site audit will occur at Dunsandel.
Okay, yeah, so there's an audit for those brands required at Dunsandel. That's great.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Just in terms of the amount of milk that you processed through the liquid milk plant in FY19, was that 3 million kgs of milk solids?
It was 9 million litres, Ari, so it's roughly correct, yes.
So, I mean, obviously that accounts, if that is roughly correct at 3 million kgs, that then accounts for sort of half of your growth in milk solids. So how do I think about the efficiencies then? Are the efficiencies sort of 4 to 5%? And if that is, and more importantly, I guess, in terms of what to sort of factor in for next year, against those new capacity numbers that you gave on AMF and ingredients, the dryers, how much of that increased capacity did you utilise in those efficiency gains in FY19?
What we're really saying is that the efficiency gains in the dryers, which is actually, they're not to be underestimated. The capacity growth that we've been able to achieve with those dryers is material. It is significant. It means that we can continue to process the volume of milk that we're receiving from our farmers at the same time as we're manufacturing more infant formula base powder. Now, as you will be aware, normally what happens when you are manufacturing more base powder, you displace milk because you can't process all the milk that you're receiving. What we're indicating is that we're comfortable that we will be able to continue to process the volume of milk that we're getting from our farm supplier base on the same kit without displacing milk.
Okay, you know, I understand that. I guess just on the commissioning status at Pokeno, you know, milk going through the plant and that, can you just sort of comment on where that's at, you know, how much is coming through or when it's going to start coming through, and just also what your commissioning contingency is with regards to, you know, any issues you might experience, you know, where that milk would go, were you to have some issues around commissioning?
Well, we're a long way down the process, so we're not expecting significant issues in terms of closing it out. We're obviously working through getting the plant hygienic and ready to process first milk. We're on track to commission this month. It's the 12th of September today, so we'll do that sometime in September, which means we are pretty close. You know, we've been working through contingency plans if we have issues. We've got good relationships with other processors in the region, and can continue to balance up milk in those aspects. So yeah, that's the status of that, and we remain on track to complete the facility and commission this month.
Great, and then just two quick final questions for you, Nigel. Just operating costs, some guidance on what we might expect that to be in FY20, and also where you see net debt sort of at this point, sort of finishing in FY20.
Yes, on slide 20, you're talking about overheads.
Yep, overheads.
Yeah, on slide 20 of the presentation, we point to the fact that we expect a greater uplift in our overheads over FY19, circa around 20%. And that's really a lot of that is the full year impact of the hires that we've made during the course of FY19.
Thank you. And just net debt?
Net debt, well, we're not providing guidance at this stage on our net debt position by the end of the year. Suffice to say that we're comfortable that we'll be able to manage our debt position with the capital expenditure that we've announced for FY20. You can see that base and then with the increased operating cash flow, our net debt position should obviously be significantly better than it is at the end of FY19.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ari.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Aaron Yu with Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Morning, Nigel and Leon. A couple of questions for me this morning. Just firstly, Nigel, probably more for you, just with regards to the gross margin achieved for this year. I mean, the powders and cream gross margin, 969, was pretty similar to what you guys achieved in the first half, I guess. I was just wondering, I mean, given the efficiencies that you probably would have achieved through, you know, the improvements you made through your canning line, I'm just trying to understand why we didn't see more of an improvement there. Was there further sort of impact because of the A2 contract?
So first off, the efficiencies in respect of the blending and canning, that comes through in the consumer package gross margin per tonne that you can see there, which has improved year on year. With the powders and cream, that excludes that's just basically the production of our powders and cream on our dryer and AMF facilities. So that has softened a little year on year, and clearly it is impacted by the lower margin that we generate from the contract with the A2 milk company. That is the primary cause for that margin reducing year on year.
And then I guess just on the comments around bringing people on ahead of assets coming online, which assets are you referring to specifically? Is this the liquid milk facility, or does this also include Pokeno?
All of those and the Talbot Forest asset as well. So, you know, all of these facilities require people to run them. And typically as part of commissioning, we recruit a team ahead of that time so they get familiar with the facility and they start to learn and get training on equipment. So often we do need to invest ahead of the curve in terms of standing up the cost to run those facilities before we get a return on them.
Right, okay. And so, I mean, but in terms of, like, which contributed more to that, was Pokeno a big contributor?
The team at Pokeno is about 70 staff.
Yep.
I think there's around 30 or 40 staff at Talbot Forest, the accountant...
About 50, I think, in the liquid milk, somewhere around there.
So a large portion of the 218 new roles we brought in are to staff the facilities that we have.
And then just with regards to your commentary around second half 20 volumes for Volcano, just around sort of infant formula based volumes being more weighted to that second half, I guess, can you comment on any, I guess, customer contracts relating to the new site and, I guess, what gives you sort of confidence around the second half?
Okay, so we're talking about the liquid facility there. You mentioned Pekino, but I think when we're talking about sales for the second half, we're talking about the liquid facility at Dunsandel. So we've started servicing Foodstuff South Island. That's the private label contract that we have in fresh milk. We also have capability for a UHT long life line in there. We always plan to commission that line second. We wanted to establish the rhythm with our anchor tenant, if I could use that word for Foodstuff South Island. We're now moving to commissioning that line. That requires, extended shelf life testing, and we are on track to have our first customer sales in the second half of this year. But, you know, if we could or were able to announce a specific customer, we would. But we're working through a mix of opportunities there that will allow us to get that facility up and running and driving strong returns for us.
Sorry, no, I was actually referring to Pekino because just on slide 19 of your presentation deck, it says here, expect gross margin per metric ton to reduce in FY20 with ingredient product comprising a higher share of overall production, as Pekino will be weighted to ingredients before producing infant-based powder towards the end of financial year.
What I can say there is what we've previously guided the market on, in that when we commission the dryer at Pekino, the intent in the first half will be predominantly ingredient products only. As we said earlier, when you commission a brand new piece of kit, you tend to focus on manufacturing ingredient products. And we indicated also that we expect and anticipate that we'll be manufacturing IFB, infant formula bulk powders, on that plant in the second half of FY20.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Adrian Albon with Craigs. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Just a follow-on question, just back into slide 19 around the gross margin. Are you able to quantify for us how much that front investment in people is?
Are we able to quantify that?
Yeah.
No, look, I not really. I mean, we wouldn't be disclosing that level of detail, Adrian, but I think the fact is that when you commission a plant, a lot of these people come on in advance of commissioning. Now, some of that cost can be capitalised as part of the commissioning of the plant. Some of it can't. And so the consequence of that is that the stuff that you can't commission, it does go basically straight into manufacturing overheads. There's a sort of a bit of a headwind in the year that we just finished. So, but we're not pointing to exactly what that number was.
Okay, and then can you just help me on the consumer packaged? Is the right way to think about this margin, which is, you know, call it $800 per metric ton? Is the right way to think about that there isn't actually any operating leverage in it? Because like if you look at your second half, I mean you've done 43% more volume than the first half, yet the actual consumer packaged margin has hardly moved.
Well, it is what it is. Certainly, the reality is that the costs, we still haven't got full efficiencies out of our RPD, our Auckland blending and canning plant yet. It's not operating at full capacity, as you'll be aware. We did bring on extra shifts, an extra shift there. So sometimes you're bearing the cost of bringing on an extra shift. It's like a step change. You bring on the cost of an extra shift, but you don't necessarily fully utilise that shift, but you need it because you've moved from a certain volume that you can do with one shift, and then you need another shift to do the incremental volume. So really you won't see, if you like, a material uplift in the margin per tonne out of our consumer package until we've got that particular facility operating at full capacity. At that point, we'll see. You should expect to see a step up.
Okay, so the way to think about the second half performance is effectively Dunsandel or redlining being offset by Auckland remaining slack.
Like I said, there has been incremental volumes coming out of Auckland, but we've had to put on extra shifts to enable that. But you don't get the full efficiency of that extra shift. It's just like if you can imagine, you bring on the incremental cost, but you don't fully utilise it, but you need it anyway, otherwise you can't produce the full volume of product. So the Auckland operation is still providing a little bit of a drag on our overall margin per tonne.
Okay.
I think you think about it the right way, Adrian.
Okay. And then just as we on FY20 with the warehouse investment announced today, should we be thinking about CapEx for the business at about 80 million?
No, that would be too low. Just to give you a bit of an insight in terms of CapEx, would be obviously you've got the remaining capital expenditure associated with the Pokeno site, that's going to be around circa 50. You've got a little bit of CapEx still on the liquid milk plant being consumed, about 15 to 20 million there. You've obviously got now the dry store, about another 30. Operational CapEx, probably around 25 odd, so you should be thinking about overall CapEx for the year that is underway or about to get underway. I would have thought roughly around 130 to 150, or something of that order, Adrian.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Nick Ma with Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys. Just a couple of easy ones. What was the IB volume for FY19?
IFB.
Sorry.
IFB.
Just over 6,000. Ari, when you get a chance to read the annual report, if you look at the CFO section commentary in the annual report, all that kind of detail is set out in there. But yep, just over 6,000.
Yeah, and then on the lactoferrin plants, the capacity's gone to 17 from 20. Is that reflecting the internal use, or is that just how you're running it?
The 17 to 20 was sales as opposed to capacity, Nick?
No, I'm talking about the capacity slide at the back. It's gone to 17 tonnes from 20 per plant.
Yeah, the capacity of the plant at 17 tonnes that you got on slide, you're talking slide 30?
Yeah, I was just saying at the first half 19 result, you had 20 in that number. What's changed?
I think if we had 20 before, the reality is the high-grade lactoferrin that we're manufacturing on that plant is basically what we're experiencing, is that the volume that we can actually manufacture of that high-grade lactoferrin that is required and that gives it the ability to be sold into the infant formula industry does restrict the capacity of that plant a little. So we've just calibrated that back to what we consider to be a more realistic number.
Sure. And the thoughts on where margins sit from here, obviously this FY19 was a good year and you've got some of those longer term contracts kicking in. Is it going to be flat down or what's the outlook?
You mean with lactoferrin?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, it really comes down to the pricing in the international market. As you know, the pricing for lactoferrin over the last 12 months has escalated materially. And the question that we're all asking ourselves, is that sustainable into the FY20 financial year? And we know that there are some other lactoferrin plants coming online during FY20 internationally. So what I would suggest, the best answer I can give, because we don't have a crystal ball on this, Nick, is we expect lactoferrin pricing to soften during the course of FY20.
Yeah, and we've seen a bit of evidence of that already, so that's probably where we're going, but it is hard to guess.
Sure thing. And then just in terms of the outlook commentary, can you give us any colour on what you expect the ROIC on both the liquid plant and Pokeno to be in the FY20 year?
What we expect is...
The ROIC.
Oh, the ROIC. No, we're not providing that information at this stage.
any kind of colour on the expected returns? I guess, you know, if you kind of sit there and say you're expecting at least 10% profit growth and you're going from a $3.5 million gross margin loss, you know, to some kind of profitability in liquid plus some contribution from Pocono, plus, you know, your infant volumes could be up somewhere around 15%. There's obviously something else going backwards in the business if 10% number.
I think the best way to think about it, Ari, is that when we do the business cases, as we've talked to you, about these before, we look at them in, over the long term. So if you take the liquid milk plant, we've historically said that the real returns that we're going to get on that plant is when we start commissioning products off the long life milk line. So effectively, we don't look at returns on an individual asset on an annual basis quite in the way that you're talking. Same with Pocono. In year one, we'll be manufacturing predominantly ingredient products. It's not until we start to lift the product mix there to IFB that the returns will come at the expectation. I think from memory, we said that liquid milk plant had a internal rate of return of just over 20% based on our model, and Pocono, I think, was about 22%. So that's an over time return as opposed to an individual annual return.
Cool. And then just on the kind of increased capacity at the blending and canning facilities, what are your assumptions around the types of products or how many different SKUs are going through there? Because obviously if you're just running, you know, one brand like A2 and long runs of, say, stage three, it's obviously going to be more efficient with less changeovers.
Yeah, look, I think the capacity uplifts, they probably do reflect our view on customer mix going forward, although the variation in product isn't that significant. Often with infant nutrition, you're working off a very strong, similar, regulated base recipe. You know, the bigger driver of those improvements in capacity or rated capacity is just the improvement in stops and time-based losses through those factories. So we feel confident we can lift those in terms of the nameplate rates that we're achieving in terms of production. But the assumption is that, you know, we would expect we would still be able to hit those capacities with some shifts in customer mix and a broader range of SKUs, Nick.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Marcus Curley with UBS. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys. Just a few. I just wondered if you could give a bit more colour on the Pocono legal case. Just in particular, can you confirm, you know, I suppose at the Investor Day you suggested that the you know, that you don't see any circumstances under which the plant could be closed?
Yeah, we're confident we'll be able to commission the facility, and we feel confident that based on the legal advice we've received that it'll be allowed to run. And you know, I provided some colour at the Investor Day around some of the circumstances around how a court might look at that, and that remains the case.
Great. Secondly, yeah, could you just give us a little bit of colour in terms of whether there was any significant volumes from Pure Canterbury or Akara in the second half infant formula number?
Marcus, no, there isn't. I mean, it's one of those things that we point out, you know, it's just we can't be certain when we're going to get those SAMR approvals in place. So, no, we've not included significant volumes in our FY20 assumptions.
You were also asking about second half this year, and I think it's fair to assume that there were no significant volumes in there. Is that what I heard?
Yes. Well, yeah, I suppose the implication was if you doubled second half as a baseline, you know, that doesn't really include any material volumes or upside.
No, sorry, Marcus, my misunderstanding. No, that's correct, because we can't actually manufacture and sell that product until we have the appropriate brand approvals in place.
Sure, I understand. Thirdly, just Nigel, you know, in terms of basic ingredients gross margins, I know you don't call it out as a number, but you know, directionally, you know, flat up or down in the year?
You mean ingredient margin per ton?
Yeah, the basic ingredients, so not bulk infant formula, but yeah, the other component of powders and cream.
Well, of course, that's a very interesting question, and I guess it's why, we, as you know, Marcus, we tend not to
disclose our margins per tonne in the various individual product groups like ISC and ingredient, because we consider that to be commercially sensitive. So it's embedded within that powders and cream number, but no, we're not specifically disclosing what the ingredient margin per tonne amount of that would be.
No, I understand that.
You might assume, let's put it to another way, you might assume that there's been an improvement there based on the fact that we've increased the volume that we have produced on the same level of kit. So almost by definition, it would be expected that our margin per tonne on our ingredient products would have improved year on year.
Okay, I understand. And then just on everyday dairy, obviously you talked about one-off costs in the second half. Obviously you're bringing on Tabbitt Forest as well. Could you give us any sort of perspective on a gross profit contribution from everyday as a, as a division in FY20? Is a positive gross profit likely, or would be a zero number more of a baseline?
Again, Marcus, we won't provide specific guidance, but I can give you a view that, yes, we would absolutely expect to have a positive gross profit in FY20 on our liquid milk facility.
Yeah, and our Talbot Forest facility.
Oh, and Talbot Forest.
For everyday dairy, we would expect a positive contribution.
Okay, thank you.
Right, thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Jonathan Snape with Bell Potter. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. But just a couple housekeeping on the FY19 ones. Just first of all, in terms of liquids, are you able to quantify exactly what the commissioning costs or one-off costs that you think you took against that $3.5 million loss were?
Yeah, look, it's a mix of things. We had some challenges commissioning the overall kit. Obviously, it's new capability to us, and some of the components, plugging those together, meant that we didn't go live with a facility that was stable, and that meant that we had both time losses and material losses. So the $3.5 million is made up of the extra costs required to get it up and running. That's man hours and the fact that we ran through a range of stops, but it also reflects waste and yield through the factory as well. So all of those things, even in recent months, have been far more stable. The team, as you do, standing up a new facility, they're working through just improvement programs every day and reducing stops, reducing waste and improving yields.
Are you able to quantify it, though? Was it like 4 million, 5 million, something like that, or less?
Well, we're quantifying the losses or the gross margin losses last year is 3.5 million. We're not spreading it out any further.
Okay, and look, just on Auckland, I think you made a comment earlier that it hadn't got GAC approval, but I think in the presentation it says it has. Which one is it?
There may be some confusion there. We have GAC approval for dairy, but not for infant nutrition in Auckland.
Yep.
We're awaiting infant nutrition registration.
Okay. And look, just coming back to the FY20 guidance, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm trying to kind of figure out how all the various bits move to the at least 10%. And taking some of your comments earlier, I think in reply to Ari, I mean, is it fair to say that the 10% assumes effectively you flatline your second half volume, so you're talking somewhere around 50,000 tonnes of infant. You get the non-recurrence of these costs at liquids, positive contribution from cheese. It says here a positive contribution from Pocono as well, lactoferrin, but then you're not going to be capitalising any more interest anymore and you're going to wear the DNA. Is that fair to say that's where the baseline is? Or are there other bits in there as well?
There's a range of factors, I think, of what you went through. You're correct. You could expect the baseline from infant nutrition volumes. If there was a range, it might be north of 50,000. I think we're saying that's a reasonable starting point for a low-end range. And you know, we acknowledge that we are changing the way that we guide, and so this is a gentle way to wean everybody off it.
I guess what I'm trying to figure out is what kind of infant number have you put in there? Because I would have thought consensus, looking at where people are for A2, would be a fair bit higher than 50,000 tonnes. So I'm trying to understand if the 10% is starting with a level of that second half annualised, or if you're looking at consensus, which I think is more like 53, and incorporating that in the baseline view of the 10%.
I guess I'm trying to figure out
the delta either way.
I think that's moving into putting words in our mouth, Jono. I mean, we shifting guidance to say profit growth will be at a rate similar to 19 over 18. So our guidance is shifting to the shape of our bottom line P&L, and that reflects the diversification of our business and that value gets created across the board.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Andrew Peros with Ausbil. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Just wondering if you could please quantify what your expected return is on that Tristore investment. And I guess the timing of when that return should be expected, is it from day one of commissioning, or is there some level of ramp up expected in generating that return?
Yeah, morning, Andrew. Good question. The nature of this investment is it's an efficiency-based CapEx. Whilst I can't be specific around the specific return that we're expecting, what we can say is it's probably slightly lower than some of the business cases we put forward for a growth-based CapEx, but it is more certain, and the efficiency that comes off it, effectively once you get up and running, starts pretty much from day one. So I hope that's helpful.
Okay. And then in relation to Pocono, not sure if you've said this in the past, so apologies if you have, but when do you start depreciating that asset?
When do we start depreciating it? That would be on commissioning, and we've indicated our intent to commission that plant during the course of September. So, depreciation effectively starts, and also, two things happen when you commission a plant. One, depreciation starts, and secondly, the capitalisation of the interest associated with the build stops.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. So, I guess maybe just help us out here then. What's the step up in D&A going into 20?
Look, we haven't specifically guided in step up and get D&A, but you might. Look, it'll be north of 40 for FY20.
Okay. I mean, some you know, quantitative guidance around that would be helpful if you can appreciate that. You're obviously spending a lot of money
over the
past of 19 and 20, so.
Hopefully that's what I just said, Andrew, is helpful.
Okay.
In guiding specifically where we wouldn't normally give you an exact number, but certainly, as I said, slightly north of 40 would be where we expect D&A to be in FY20.
Okay, and then in terms of the capitalised interest in 19, what was that number?
Oh, look, off the top of my head, it's actually I think it's about 7.5 and 19. The exact number is sitting in the annual report, in my CFO report. I just don't have that in front of me right now. We do a complete reconciliation of our interest expense in my report.
Okay, but and then in terms of FY20, very little or no capitalised interest?
Very little. There will be a little bit of capitalised interest on Pokanei until we commission, so that'll be basically for the month of August and, you know, part of September. There'll be a little bit of capitalised interest associated with the build of the dry store, and a little bit on the liquid milk plant, because we haven't quite commissioned our UHT line, so there's a bit of capitalised interest on that as well, and that'll be about it. So you can work out it'll be materially less than we experienced in FY19.
Okay. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. Once again, star the one to register a question. Your next question comes from Warren Head with MG Publications. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Wonderful to see a good Canterbury company doing so well, since I'm talking to you from Christchurch. Now, I want to go back to, past the production side, if I may, and look at markets, if I could, and the balance between supply and demand. Now, I notice, Leon, that in the annual report, talking about investing for growth, you have an interesting comment in there where you talk about the business being essentially focused around one sector, one market, and one customer. So I wonder if you would mind giving us a little bit more detail about market development and where you are at in rebalancing that. And phase two of the question, of course, is rate of milk collection and farmer acquisition. I imagine Pekino was rushed, you know, by farmers to sign up. But in terms of managing the milk collection side, I'm just wondering whether or not there are more farmers queued and how you're balancing that supply side with all the uncertainties, particularly now in Asia, and a hold-up in the United States on registration, how these two things meld up in your overarching strategic view of where you're headed. Rather than looking at under the bonnet, I'm interested here in where the vehicle is headed.
Yeah, great. Thanks for the metaphor to clarify what there's a lot of the question, but look, I think you're right to point to the fact that there's quite a bit of macroeconomic and geopolitical uncertainty in the world at the moment, and you're right to point to the fact that we have a high level of concentration risk in the business. And our businesses is still focused around the category of infant nutrition and exposure to the Chinese market. So look, our plans and our strategy as we presented today is about being very clear that we do want to drive diversification into the organisation. We've been clear around where we want to do that. That does mean diversification as well as focusing outside of categories and channels, but also into market opportunities. So, look, when we're evaluating the growth opportunities that we see in front of us, we prioritise them around not just the economic value that they provide, but the strategic value they provide against the intent to drive the car in that direction, and that will give us just a greater diversification should one significant market move or otherwise. To your question around milk pool development, we tend to recruit the milk that we feel we need. We do that up front when we're commissioning facilities. And then what we do is we start commissioning facilities around processing all of the ingredients that come from that milk stream. Typically with a new facility, that means starting with a commodity or more base level ingredient, which is why Nigel was referring to the fact that Pekino this year will largely be running on ingredients and IFB as we transition those facilities over to higher value. So the growth we tend to create is not so much in growth of the volume milk pool that we take, but in the transition once we've stood up facilities to higher value products within those facilities. So look, we're not expecting future milk pool growth around either our Waikato milk pool or our Christchurch or our Canterbury-based milk pool in the near future. We would only peg that to additional processing facilities once they're announced. So I hope that covers your question. And as you point out, there's a fair amount of global uncertainty. It is important that we continue to diversify the business.
And I guess somewhere in the middle, there is an inventory status, and it would be interesting to know whether or not that's up, down this year, or sideways, and reflecting, you know, capacity utilisation in Christchurch and in Auckland.
Yeah, Nigel here. We indicated that our finished goods inventory actually is down on last year because we've been able to manage that more efficiently. If you go to the annual accounts, and if you also look again in my CFO section or my CFO report in the annual report, I provide more insight as to the total overall makeup of inventory, because our raw materials inventory is actually growing year on year, and that's mainly about the growth, because the raw materials are mainly used, and of course, in the manufacture of infant formula.
So there has been a growth in raw materials, albeit our finished goods inventory has come down year on year.
Thanks very much, Nigel.
You're welcome.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Ball for any closing remarks.
Right, well, thanks guys for the call. I hope you found that useful. We remain available for a range of other calls that have been set up with you, and we'll move into a roadshow week commencing week after next,
yeah.
So look, as I said at the start, look, it's been a really busy year. This remains an amazingly dynamic and energising place to work. It's relentless at times, but we really like it that way, and look forward to continuing the Synlait stories. And in terms of delivery, the investment and the clarification that we've brought through this year. So thank you.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.